history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there. Amazing stories, remarkable stories, sobering stories, and inspirational stories just waiting to be told. Sometimes all we have to do is ask a few questions and be patient enough to listen. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And when we do that, we end up learning so much. We're educated, we're entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This coming Wednesday, February 19th, will mark the 75th anniversary of the start of the Battle of Iwo Jima, and an official commemoration will take place in Washington, D.C. at the National World War II Memorial. A battle that was expected to take just a matter of days turned into 5 weeks of carnage and chaos. Of the more than 110,000 Americans involved, nearly 7,000 were killed and more than 19,000 wounded. Keep your eyes and ears open in the week ahead for 75th anniversary tributes to the heroes of Iwo Jima. And here on Hometown Heroes, we're going to spend the next hour listening to the memories of three Marines who experienced that battle firsthand. They were all teenagers when they landed on that small volcanic island in the Pacific. Umbert Cantelmi was the son of Italian immigrants who had settled in Delano, California. His first taste of combat came at this place that, like so many of those Marines, he had never heard of before.
Well, the first time I heard of it was when we were going there. Mm-hmm. It was on board ship. They had a replica of the island, and that's where I first heard it.
And how did they break that to you in terms of the expectations they laid out for you, how they anticipated the battle to go?
Well, they first thought it would only be about a 3 or 4 day operation, and they thought they bombed the island for a long time, maybe 3 months, heavy bombers, and then the battleships bombarded it, and they had cruisers at that time too. They were firing at it, and the planes bombing it at least 3 or 4 times a week. And they still didn't hurt those caves.
Well, and that's the thing. The upper echelon believed at the time that the amount of shelling they had done there, that not much could survive that. But boy, were they wrong.
Huh? They were wrong, yes.
And you, at the time, you were in a replacement outfit?
I was in a replacement, and I was aboard ship, though, when the initial landing. That was on February 19th, mm-hmm. 1945, and I went in on the 20th in the morning, 9 o'clock, I think, 9, 10, somewhere in there, on an Amtrak. A bunch of us all went on the island because we had to start doing the unloading until we were called. And then the casualties got so heavy after 4 or 5 days, we were all placed into the different, most of us went into the 5th Marine Division.
Well, and I imagine, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes and imagine what would have been going through your mind at the time. If they gather you on the ship and they show you a little mock-up of this island that's not very big, has a big mountain on one end of it and a couple airfields, and they say it's going to be over in 3 or 4 days, and you're in a replacement outfit, you probably aren't anticipating too vicious a battle, right?
That's true.
So you didn't expect to be in the thick of it like you were.
Right. Correct.
When you did go ashore the second day after the initial landing, the day after the battle started in February of 1945, what did you see as you got onto that beach?
Well, I'll tell you, I thought I was in a nightmare because shells were falling all over, artillery and mortars and everything. And if you didn't get down, you would probably be chewed up with the mortar shells, and there were so many that were killed that way with the mortars.
And probably killed not too far from you, on your left and on your right.
Yeah. There was bodies that were just dead Marines piled up for removal, for burial, I guess. And then a lot of the guys were, what they say, they said the first 72 hours there was two out of three were hit, either wounded or killed.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't put you in very good odds.
No.
And how did you handle that? Because I, this is your first taste of combat. You haven't been in any other battles. You're 19 years old. You've never faced anything like this. And all of a sudden, there are guys on your left, guys on your right, guys in front of you who are dead. And you have to be thinking, I'm next, don't you?
Well, you wonder when it's going to be. You mean, it might be any time. So I just happened to be moving at the time the mortar dropped where I was standing or moving along. And like one time that the Japanese would launch these big rockets. They were rockets. They think they put them on. They had no accuracy, but they landed on somewhere on the island, and they had to kill somebody. So we were moving forward, and we're setting up for the night. And we have these demolition guys. They come ahead of us and set these trip flares. So they hit these trip flares, and then you can see them silhouetted. But anyway, my squad leader said just settle in this shell hole here. And he was going to come in with me, but till he got his squad set up. And then he comes by and says, you better move out of it because someone else is coming here. There was a little knoll in the back, about 50 feet or so, or I don't know. And I started digging the foxhole there. And I was about probably knee deep, about ready to, you don't dig very far. You just got to get covered.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those rockets landed right in the hole. I was just left. So, and there's other, close calls. I'd look back, and I had to watch a cave one time they were moving forward, and see if any, the enemy coming out of the caves or to watch. And after a while, they were getting up there a little way, so I decided I had to get up with them. So just as I was out of range of I looked back and a mortar landed right there. So I just, it just happened to be, I guess the Lord was with me. I'm sure he was. We had to get to the north end.
Eventually.
Yes. So that, I think it was, they said 26 days, but it was 36 days when we started, we moved down to the, taken over. And like I was saying that we come down, I didn't say it yet, but we came down from the north end and dug in on the side of the, into the sand for that evening, and the planes were coming in. Some of the planes that needed, that were to be, that were crippled, they were already been flying in.
Because the runway had been taken by American forces, so right. It was safe for them to land there.
Right. They would, mm-hmm. they had repaired the runways, and they were coming in. Well, this was a hearsay, but the airmen, there was a group of airmen, they slept in tents above ground, and we were dug in, waiting for our ship to take us back to Hawaii. They come during the night to the Japanese, and they cut all their throats, and we heard that on the.
I've heard a lot of stories like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when something like that happens, you're thankful that you were where you were and not where they were, but it probably also says, hey, are we safe where we are either?
Right. Correct.
I can't imagine what you're going through. I want to paint a more complete picture for the folks at home of what it was like for you as a Marine there with the 5th Marine Division. What were you carrying? How were you equipped for battle? You had a pack on your back that probably weighed 50 or 60 pounds?
About a 60-pound pack. And we had our folding little shovel that we carried. It was pretty hard to dig a hole with it, but it worked. And we had grenades on our side here, and we had ammunition belts and M1.
Mm-hmm. And you were carrying something else. Besides the weaponry and the shovel, something your sister sent you from home in Delano?
Yes. It was a medal of the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And what'd you do with that?
Well, I put it around my neck, and I have a lot of faith in it. I think that brought me through it. We had that mass one time, I don't know, it was about 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks after we were able to get in the safe area. We had mass, and he said, now you got to promise yourselves if you come out of this alive, you will go to church every Sunday. So, you know, everybody did that, I'm sure. I did.
That's an opportunistic priest, isn't it?
Right. So for a while when I got back, I didn't go to church. And then I had to sponsor one of my friends wanted me to sponsor their daughter for baptism.
Uh-huh.
So I decided I better go to confession and get myself back to church because I promised God, and you promise God, that's serious. So from then on, I tried to go to church every Sunday.
Everybody who was on Iwo Jima or near Iwo Jima in February and March of 1945 seems to have a story about the flag, and there is no image from World War II that's been seen more than the raising of the flag atop Mount Suribachi. But that image we all know is the second flag that was on top of that mountain.
Correct. The first one was small.
And you saw the first one.
Well, maybe I saw the big one. But I when I looked up the first time, and the flag was there, so I may have been the first one.
And where were you at the time? How did you find out? Someone say, "Hey, look over there."
I was in the somewhere pretty close because the 20th Marines. Took the
they made the ascent up Suribachi.
They sent up the Suribachi and took it, so I hadn't I hadn't been too far away. So it was down maybe 500 yards or 1,000 yards away from it.
And did someone say something, or you just noticed it, or?
I think someone mentioned it, and we looked up, and we saw the flag up there on Suribachi, and that gave us a boost.
That meant something. It wasn't just, that's nice. It was, hey, we're doing something here.
Right, correct.
I mean, was that a real impact for you? Was it like, someone giving you a shot in the arm? How big of an impact did it have?
I would say so. It was a big impact because we knew that it had been taken, and that was one of the Marines that went up that Suribachi had it tough because they were all entrenched. The Japanese the caves in there, and they had, I think they even had artillery and machine guns, they were connected with the main island because they had a tunnel from the Suribachi down to the mainland, so it took them, they had to use flamethrowers and everything to get to the top of that Suribachi, and they had it rough, they really did, probably a lot more than I did.
Well, and so you saw the flag flying there initially, and since then I'm sure you've seen the famous Rosenthal picture of it millions of times. You've seen pictures, maybe even been to the Marine Corps Memorial in Washington, D.C. with a huge bronze statue of that scene. When you see that image today of the Marines raising the flag atop Mount Suribachi, what does it mean to you? What does it do to you? Does that have a powerful impact on you, and does it move you still today?
Oh, yes, it still moves me. In fact, I've ordered some of the statuettes for the raising of the flag on Suribachi, and I got one for each one of my children. So it did.
So if you're thumbing through a magazine today and you see that, what do you think of? What does that make you think of guys you served with? Does it remind you of guys who are still buried there? I mean, what does it make you think of now just to look at that image?
I just thank God that it was completed and taken over, because that's what was main reason why they were able to bomb Japan and have it surrender.
Iwo Jima survivor Umbert Cantelmi passed away in 2012, but his memories and his legacy remain. We're going to take a quick break, and then more of this special edition of Hometown Heroes in preparation of the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Iwo Jima. One Marine who was carried off of Iwo Jima, believe it or not, in a body bag, and another who has felt the reminder of his injuries there with every step he's taken the last 75 years. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.